Hello, I'm Jane Johnson, the founder of Careering Into Motherhood, and it really is good to be back with a shiny new series of the podcast. We're going to be dropping this podcast weekly with a series of guests, some of which I'll be interviewing and others I'll be handing over the mic. Our aim at Careering Into Motherhood is to make life as a working mother that little bit easier. And I passionately believe that coaching and a supportive community are absolutely fundamental to that. It's why we have a partnership with over 60 different coaches who can help you with anything from changing careers to parenting children with special educational needs, going through divorce or other relationship challenges, to launching a business of your own. All the support and advice from our coaches is available on our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com. And don't forget, the Careering Into Motherhood community is also available to you over on Facebook. Just search for our name and apply to join the group. We've got 11,000 other mums who will welcome you with open arms, and you can meet and engage with our coaches there as well. Now, without further ado, let's get into today's episode. And let's get this interview started. My guest today is Josie Gammell. Josie is a former female actor who left the bright lights of LA and New York to return to the UK and work with clients to help them uncover and articulate their value. Whether it's ahead of a big presentation, an interview, or just generally coming across with more confidence, Josie uses the techniques she learned at acting school to help clients uncover their own unique style. Now, we've all had those moments where we know we have an important moment coming up, either in an interview, giving a talk or a presentation, where we just want to speak up, but it doesn't quite go the way we'd hoped. Either it doesn't go the way you'd planned it in your head, or perhaps you decide it's best not to say anything. And then you go home and the self-talk is all about the negative. Well, Josie isn't about teaching clients to be something they aren't, to deploy someone else's techniques and skills. She can't make a client. She can't make you something you're not. Quite the opposite. In fact, Josie says, first of all, we need to get really comfortable in ourselves, in who we are and who and what our own style is. To get yourself into the very best state of you and then to embody that physically. Sound sensible? Let's find out more. Welcome, Josie. I'm absolutely delighted to have you here this morning and to be talking about how we articulate our value. Now, you are a communications coach. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of the conversation, how on earth does someone become a communications
very coach? Good question. Well, hello, Jane, and everyone listening. It's brilliant to be with you. My background is actually as an actor. I was an actor for 30 years, and like any good working actor, had a number of concurrent careers going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we get trained in as actors is how to be truly present to the present moment. I was based in New York and LA, and when I decided to come back to the UK, I thought I no longer want to be on the stage. I want to help people understand how to be truly authentic in the moment when it counts. And so I transferred all that experience and training into helping people.
And so you work with people in business, senior execs, yeah, or you know, anyone who maybe is even preparing for an interview or got a big presentation or something. I know you and I have spoken about this before. How we feel when we go into that meeting really affects how we show up in that meeting, doesn't
absolutely
it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a charming phrase, emotional leakage. How we feel is immediately evident from how we look, how our voice sounds, what we do with our bodies, how we gesture, how we hold eye contact. So it's incredibly important to have got ourselves squared away before we even enter the meeting and people set eyes on us for the first time, that we feel emotionally secure and confident about what we're doing.
Ooh, I love that. So how, that's as easily said, how do you get yourself into that great state of mind?
Right. Well, you need a means, don't you? Because It's one of those things that when adrenaline is coursing through your frame, it's not a point where your neofrontal cortex can come in with sort of rational suggestions about what you can do. It's something you have to know and therefore just lock into that best state. And you need a means of doing that. So a lot of the work I do is in helping people articulate their value. The value that they bring as just as a human being because they exist, and also in the particular workplace that they're entering or the job or project that they're wanting to do. So you need to sort of take a step out of the river and do that basic emotional prep work. So when you're then preparing to go into a meeting, you've got all that in the storehouse. You can go, oh, yes, that's right. I know who I am. I know why I want to do this. And I know the value that I'm bringing. One of the responses I get a lot with coaching is when we're doing this emotional prep about how you own your own unique, unchangeable value, nearly always at some point, someone will go, oh my gosh, this is really deep. Okay, it is. It is really deep. It is really deep. It's about our identity. It's about who we understand ourselves to be in the world and what it is that we have to contribute.
I love that. So just to recap on those two things, before you go in, you want to be really clear on who I am, what I'm doing, was it you said, and the value that I bring.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So you have to know, you know, why you, you know, it's the Simon Sinek thing, start with why. And it's that thing about recognizing that there is a place for you. There are things in your life that only you can do because of the particular makeup of giftings and experience and education and learnings. And then working out where is it that you want to place yourself so that you can bring the highest value to what others are doing. And when you're locked in that, everything about you changes because no longer are you trying to sell yourself. You're not trying to say, well, I've done this and I've been here and I know this person and I'm really good at this, and which immediately feels salesy and slightly frenetic. This. You just come in and you go, hello, it's really good to meet you. Delighted to be here. And I'd love to hear more about what you're trying to do. And what you're doing in that moment is you're already owning the value that you're going to bring. You're not telling people, you're allowing them to meet, engage with you, find out who you are, and then let them ask questions. So you want to take that whole idea of selling yourself, just park that whole thing on the side, because no one likes doing that. It's horrible.
It's really interesting, isn't it? And I'm guilty of it myself. You think going into meetings and thinking, you know, possibly racing ahead, putting ideas in other people, or your views of what other people are thinking about you, thinking I've got to desperately prove why I'm supposed to be here. So I tend to, you know, talk at 1,000 miles an hour, make a load of different points. And also this assumption that I need to justify why I'm in the room.
Exactly.
I've already been invited in the room.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I mean, so much of what we do, particularly in an interview situation, is that we talk too fast. You know, we're just basically throwing everything against the wall in the that something will stick. You know, it's like, I'm really lovely, I'm really good, and you'd really like to hire me, and blah, 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 blah. And you're thinking, internally, you're going, shut up. Why am I doing this? Why am I not just being a grown-up and sitting here and smiling warmly and letting the silence sit and thinking through what they're really asking me? And it's because you're not trusting to the fact that you are a whole person. What you're doing is that you're believing that people will only know who you are from what you say. And that's completely untrue. I mean, if we were on screen today, you know, you would have immediately, and anyone watching would immediately take you and me in and go and decide what they think we're like. Because that's what we do. And that is entirely visual. Or on a podcast, in the first 4 seconds of this podcast, the listeners, you guys out there, will have decided whether this was worth listening
to. Is that short? It is. 4 seconds.
4 seconds. Wow. 4 seconds. It's the most important 4 seconds of an entire meeting, and that visual or audible. Because we are social beings, and actually it's a survival response. So seconds, we're asking four questions. First question we're asking is a primal one about our own survival. Am I in danger? Second, a hierarchical question. Is this person more powerful than me, less powerful than me, or my peer? And if we take that back to caveman days, it's like, could this person take me? Could I take them? Or would it be fair? You know, the third one is an absolutely true, particularly visually, is how good do I think this person's going to be at their job? You know, so it's like if you're in Currys going to buy a washing machine and you look around and you go, no, I'm not going to ask them, which is, you know, based on nothing other than visual, you know, because we are constantly assessing proficiency. And then the last one, do I think I'll like them? No. Oh, yes. You know, I mean, it's incredible because we're social beings. So we are so finely attuned in being able to assess others, rightly or wrongly. So the point about owning your value is making sure that you've got yourself squared away emotionally so that you do come in as your best self. Because those 4 seconds, you can't get back.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, isn't it? So if you take almost any, so whether it's the sort of one-on-one interview or one or two interviews that tend to be these days, and I suppose this is perhaps where working with a communications coach would really help, because you cannot change people's prejudices, people's biases, whatever they're going to, you know, I might like somebody in a pair of green trousers, you might like someone in a pair of yellow trousers. You cannot be all things to all people. And especially when if you're giving a presentation, you're speaking in front of a larger group, the number of people who are going to bring those biases, those prejudices, those social conditioning, you are never going to please them all, are you? You're never going to make them all laugh. You're never going
to. No, exactly. And the thing to remember, the important thing to remember is you don't need to.
Exactly.
You don't need every. You know, we can't serve the whole world. We can't. Thank God there's so much variety. And so the key for you going in, for any of us going in, is that we are fully authentic to who we actually are. Therefore, the people who are going to connect with us will connect with us, and we don't have to worry about the rest. The awful feeling, though, is to go into a meeting and feel that you weren't your real self. Maybe if you had been your real self, they might have had a different response to you. So that's why it is a method. You know, it's not sort of have a go. Oh, I hope I'm feeling good on the day. You know, like, well, some days you will be feeling really great. And other days, you know, you know, your dog's sick, your child's off school, you've got an elderly parent, you've just got the gas bill, whatever it is, you can't carry that into the meeting with you. You have to have a means of parking it so you can go, wait a minute, I'm going to clear my emotional, mental and physical space so that I can be locked into my best state for the next 45 minutes or the next 15 minutes. Hour and a half, whatever it is, to get the job done to the best of my ability.
So is this, you know, the first bit of work you do is getting really comfortable with who you are, with knowing your value, as we've talked about at the start.
You know, a lot of the work is actually remembering who you are. You know, we tend to narrow ourselves down to, well, I've got a degree in this, or I've worked here, or, you know, and it's so linear and it's so two-dimensional. So I often, you know, I liken the exercise to so often through the opinions of others, through our own experiences, what happens is we start to self-edit. And obviously that can be a good thing. We don't want to just do anything. We want to act appropriately. And yet there's also a part of us through anxiety that goes, well, you know, if I'm a fuse board, who I am is a fuse board, and there are 12 fuses, it's so easy for us to go, well, 7 of those fuses need to be switched off because that's not going to be this environment. You know, like I'm a huge party person and I obviously can't bring that into the room. Well, actually, that's a huge advantage in a team, is buoyed up by having other people around them full of ideas. You know, so it's breaking down those barriers. I get people to think about themselves from a 360 perspective and to recognize that that's your personal brand. Who is actually your personal brand. And if you try to make a different brand because you're not confident in who you are, we spot it. Immediately we spot it. And that's all body language, eye contact, and that just innate sense. I mean, I can break it down forensically because this is what I do. But any of us, you know, I remember when my kids were little and my daughter was about four, and she came up and she said, "Mummy, they don't like me." And we were just going into a birthday party and she hadn't met, you know, but just instinctively we pick up all these signs. So you can't control other people. All you can do is control yourself. So feeling really good about yourself is absolutely the foundation for everything else we do as a human being.
If you're a coach listening to this and you want to join our mission to make life that little bit easier for working mothers, then we have a limited number of places available on our coaching partnership programme in 2024. You'll get access to our community of thousands of mums interested in coaching advice, in-person support with your business development and marketing, and opportunities to create a valuable content library that resonates with your potential clients. Coaching can be a lonely business when you're on your own. We've got a supportive cohort of around 60 other coaches who can help you. And we bring marketing and communications tools and an active community of mums. I'm Jane, the founder of Careering Into Motherhood. And as a fellow female founder, I want to see your business thrive. And I want to help more women to access the game-changing powers of your professional coaching. Email me for more details, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. That's jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. Now back to the interview.
So interesting. And, you know, and I think often as well, motherhood tends to challenge a lot of those things about feeling really good about yourself, whether it's confidence as a parent, whether it's confidence returning to the workplace once you've become a parent. You know, I know loads of women who've sort of said, well, I no longer feel really good about myself, whether that is, you know, just because everything I knew about the world has changed since I've become a parent, whether that's that I feel the workplace has moved on, or whether it's just, you know, the fact that I physically have changed.
Yes.
All the makes so much sense.
I had a great example of this recently in that we live in a small road and there's a delightful gal who lives about three doors down who's been at home with her kids for a few years. And on the side, she runs a sort of travel business. And I saw on LinkedIn an extraordinary opportunity that would have been perfect for her. And I sent her a note and I said, gosh, you'd be great at this. And she goes, oh, no, it's so long since I've been out of the game. I couldn't possibly, but thank you for thinking of me. And I thought, that's all about our internal narrative. You know, it's all about, well, no, I can't. Rather than, well, what have I learned over the last few years? Because, you know, and it's something that I think the world is just crucially missing out on with women going back to work, having been out of the workforce for a while, the professional work, because they've been raising kids, is they've effectively been the CEO of their household for the last few years, which comes with all the same skills that you need in running a business. I mean, multitasking, prioritizing, negotiating. I mean, isn't all negotiation? I mean, I had a client earlier this week. I said, you know, what's the emotion you want the board to feel at the end of this meeting? He said, well, I want them to feel excited and encouraged. And I said, okay, well, if you were talking to your kids, he was 7 and 5, what is the sort of language you would use? And she started to say that. And I said, well, that's the language you should use. Because human beings are human beings. You know, it's like we just put to one side all our emotional intelligence and common sense because we feel it. The principles of communication are changed by environment. If you hear nothing else from our chat today, the principles of communication do not change. You are always speaking to other human beings. And essentially, what unites us, what makes us the same, is far greater than what makes us different from one another.
Yes.
You know, really engaging with people. Really, I mean, in an interview situation, what you've got to remember is that the people doing the interviewing might be nervous. They might not be very good at interviewing. You know, and just spending time standing in their shoes before you go in. What's going on in their day? What are they thinking about? Mm. Who are they answering to? What do they have to achieve today? And suddenly you bring yourself around onto the same side of the table as them, and you realize together in an endeavor to produce something good.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you spend all that time preparing for the interview, and you show up, or the presentation, and you show up, and it's easy to forget that you are just one appointment in their whole day. You put so much effort into it. So I want to move on a little bit to talk about, linked very much to that, is how do you, if you are just one appointment in a very busy day, how do you make your message stick? And so we've talked a lot about the immediate sort of presumptions or assumptions that people might make about you. Let's assume we've got to the point where they're listening, you're having a conversation. Yeah. How do you make your message stick?
Huge, obviously. And it's understand how to do. I think one of the things to remember is that 85% of what we say completely forgotten within 45 minutes. Completely forgotten. So if you're going into an interview process and they're doing, I don't know, they could be doing 6 other interviews that day, they could be doing 12. And if it's virtual, probably even more. And so you have to decide, and you can decide before you have that interview, what is the one thing I want them to remember about me? What's the one thing? I mean, obviously, if you're there for the interview, you're eligible for the job, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't have got the interview. So think about, what is the one thing I want them to remember about me? Because it's this thing about, if you don't have a target, you don't know if you've hit it, right? So it's going in and just hoping it goes well. It's going in and saying, okay, the one thing I want them to know about me is that, yes, I come with a lot of experience, and I am really eager to learn. I am really eager to come alongside others in the team and feel that I can make the contribution from what I've already done. And I want to add to those strengths by joining forces with the team you already have. You know, and even the phrasing of that is different from, I've got all this experience, what I don't have. And immediately, rubbish. Yeah. I'm crawl back into my hole and wish I'd never got out from under my duvet this morning. It's like moving forwards all the time. So one of the ways to be memorable is to tell a story, either to tell a story or to paint a picture. Because those two things evoke emotion. And from a neuroscience point of view, emotion opens the right-hand side of the brain, which gives us access to the left-hand side of the brain, where we retain data. So for some reason, I was talking to you today and I said, you know, the thing that I was noticing this morning was the fact that I really want a blue kettle, right? I can't remember why I was saying that to you, but say we were and then, you know, the conversation would end and someone later in the day would say, oh, who are you talking to today, Jane? And you'd go, and you would probably have a visual of me and go, and we were talking about, and what the little person in your mental Rolodex will be doing will be going through until it hits an emotion, right? And the emotion will relate to a picture or a story or an image. An analogy, and then you'll go, oh, I know what we were talking about. We were talking about interview technique, right? That's the way we retain data. So you want to, stories are genius because you can talk about, you know, so for example, if you have, what was the most interesting job you've ever done? Describe where it was. I've done a lot of data analysis in the past. You know, well, actually, I was based in Coventry in this tiny little medieval building, but absolutely brilliant. Mm. I totally loved it. Yeah, I think it was pre-Tudor. You know, it's just that thing. It's really attaching to people's memories and understanding how the brain works, because people are not moved by data. You know, you can go in and you can say, well, I've been to a, you know, really top-notch university. I've got this degree. I've worked in this place. It'll all float away. But if you say it was the time, you know, when I, the first time I knew I wanted to get into the hospitality services, for example, was at my mother's 50th birthday party. And I saw whatever it was, bring your humanity into it.
Yes. Yeah. It's true, isn't it? Because if you think about films, films you remember are the ones that made you feel something. Even, you know, books, stories, they are the ones that stick with you are the ones that made you feel something. Teachers, people always say, you know, who's your favorite teacher? And you remember that one or two teachers, there's one or two teachers who stood out because they made you feel a particular way.
Yeah, for good or bad. I mean, one particular maths teacher who I think I exasperated to death, probably. But I do remember him. I do remember him because there was the, sort of the size of Josephine, let's do this. You know, but it's absolutely true. Emotion is everything. And so you really want to bring specificity of who you are. You know, it's not that, you know, you get one life, you know, and people find you in one place. I mean, when I go into companies, I say, what does this company have? And I might be coaching a group and I'll say, what does this company have? Say it's a bank. I'll say, you know, what does this bank have that no other bank has? And you can see everyone and they're scanning the sort of categories of what the bank does. And, you know, and they're just like, no, I know that Barclays does that, or I know that Santander does that, or whatever. And the answer is you.
Yes.
This bank, you know, is the only bank that has you. And all business is relational. And so it is a relationship between real human beings. And why do people, when I was an actor, you know, I was working in film in Los Angeles. And what you discovered over and over and over again is it really wasn't about talent at the end of the day, because the baseline is talent. You have to be extremely talented to even get it.
Yes.
Ultimately, people will hire the people they want to spend 5 weeks on set with. You know what I mean? Like, there are some actors, and there are some brilliant actors who are known to be tricky, and they've just managed to carve out that career and people are willing to put up with it. But most people are just like, no, honestly, that would be a nightmare. And they'll go with someone else, you know. And so the people who are brilliant and love tend to be the most successful.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? And someone had told me once, which I think is a great tip, if whether you're in any kind of, you know, high pressure presentation, communication situation, if you feel your voice breaking or you suddenly realize that you have gone at 1,000 miles an hour, there's nothing wrong with taking stock and saying, I'm sorry, I'm just really excited about this opportunity, or I'm sorry, I'm really nervous because I really want this opportunity, or I really want to do well or something. Again, it's all part of bringing your audience into who you are and understanding your passion.
Humanity. I mean, we've all been in that situation. We've all been the person walking into the room. So just being authentic. The other thing I would say in response to that is to remember that people can only hear what you've said when you stop talking. So communication actually happens in the silence. It doesn't happen while we're talking. While someone is talking, your brain is receiving those words. Only when they take a beat can you think, oh, what did I just hear? The reason we resist pausing is that we think if we stop talking, nothing's going on. But in actual fact, when we leave a pause, which is just a beat, it enables the other person to go, oh, that's interesting. I'll ask about that. Otherwise, it's... and then you finally have to stop because your brain has run out of oxygen, you know, and you've lost... you know, so it's like recognize that pausing is your friend, It immediately increases how confident you appear. It gives you gravitas and authority. I always say the person with the most power in the room is the person who's most comfortable with silence. Because they're allowing themselves to think. It's like, remember, with question and answer, it's not a ping pong match. It's not, you know, it's not. So you go, well, that's a very interesting question. What I'd like to say in response to that is, take a moment. Take a breath. Go, okay, how do I want to respond to that? And no one's leaving the room. What they're thinking, they're really confident. They're actually thinking about that question. That tells lots about what that person would bring into the room if they worked here.
Yeah, and I know we talked about this a month or so ago when we were talking about this episode about the quickest way to regain attention. And I actually used it with my son. Yeah. A few times over Christmas, because I think, you know, I just constantly do this, do that, talking, and it's just noise to him. So when he switches off and I know he's not listening, I just stopped. And you do, it absolutely works. You've suddenly, oh, hang on, what did she just say?
Well, it's like when you think back to school days and you think, who was the teacher who had most control? It wasn't the one who continued shouting over the chaos. It was the one who finally just stop talking. And, you know, even, you know, who's ever throwing spitballs at the back of the room or whatever they're doing, eventually everyone will go, wait, what? What did she say? Did you ask a question? Do you know what I mean? Because actually it's danger. It's a prompt response, but it is. It's the fastest way to regain the attention of a room is to stop talking.
Brilliant. It's so good. It has been absolutely lovely talking to you. We've covered so much. Where can people find out more about working with you, Josie, whether it's in a corporate environment or whether it's one-to-one?
Absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn, and there will be a QR code on LinkedIn showing you some of the courses I am running. I work with individuals as well as groups and, of course, companies. So it's all about, you know, with a coach, it's all about finding the right fit, finding the person to click with and taking your time. Do you know what I mean? Communication is not something that we'll ever check the box on. You know, we'll go, I've nailed it. It's, we're always learning. We're always improving. There's always something new to learn. So it's very important to have a growth mindset and go, so next time what I'm going to do is I obviously need to do a little bit more prep before I go in because I wasn't ready for that question, rather than, oh, that didn't go well. You know, it's just like constantly growing, constantly grounding yourself in the unique combination of value that you are bringing.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, just before we close, I was listening to something this morning. We're talking about coaching or coaches in general, and said, it is not a coach's job to make you brilliant, but it's their job to uncover your brilliance or your genius. So when you're working in something like this, I think it's all too easy to look at the Obamas or look to all these amazing orators and go, God, I need to be like that person. But actually you don't. It's about uncovering who you are.
And also remember how much coaching the Obamas have had. No one out of bed that. Do you know what I mean? It goes, hey, in actual fact, that's so beautifully put. It's one of the things I say when I first meet people is that you already have the whole package. You already have everything you need. What I am here to help you with is to take down some of the barriers that we put in the way of allowing ourselves to be fully seen and fully heard. So grounding yourself in that place where, because, you know, when you're feeling emotionally secure, you are naturally and delightfully yourself. And that's the goal. Be yourself, because we need you for the person you actually are.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much indeed for your time this morning. It's been lovely talking to you. I've learned so much, and I'm sure our listeners have too.
Absolute pleasure. Have a good one.
I can't say I like the fact that we have a matter of seconds before people form an initial opinion of us, but I do think there's absolutely something in it. And until we can change that, we need to work it to our advantage. As Josie said, before going into any important meeting, think, who am I? What am I doing here? What's the reason for this conversation? And what's the value I know I can bring? It's a great structure to get you started when planning any presentation or any interview. And those things that Josie said that people use to evaluate situations that come from a truly primitive part of the brain, in a corporate setting that might be, are they relaxed? Are they smiling? Do they look comfortable in their own skin? Are they more powerful than me? I.e., does their behaviour feel threatening or put me at ease? Even, does it feel threatening to my organisation? And we've all been in those front few rows of the audience where the speaker will open with a question and threatens to pick on you first. That's absolutely that primitive part of the brain in action, as you recoil in horror, thinking it might be you picked first. And how good do I think this person is? Codified these days as, could this person do the job? Could this person lead from the front, from the back, or even from the sidelines? Are they a team player? And then also, don't forget, using the power of the pause. Let silence sit. It's a really great way of gaining attention or regaining attention if you feel it's waning. Lots and lots of food for thought there about neuroscience and the way we show up, which I'll leave you to think about until next week. I hope this episode has helped to make life that little bit easier for you as a working mum or as someone who wants to support working mums and thinks they deserve a bit more help. I'm Jane Johnson. Thank you for listening. Please don't forget to leave us a review. And I'll be back again next week with another brilliant guest.